Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Hey, hey. Welcome, everyone, to our fourth episode of the Woody Overton Window. My name is Mike Agavino, and I am your host. Happy Father's Day to all the dads out there, and a very special happy Father's Day to Woody Overton, who was able to get out of the hospital and spend Father's Day at home. As we reported on Friday, Woody's doing a lot better. He was finally diagnosed correctly and began receiving the right meds and began responding immediately. And so he's doing a heck of a lot better. It was not a good situation. He was in a tremendous amount of pain and endured a lot. I mean, it was a couple of weeks worth of going through this for him. So I know he appreciates all the prayers and all the well wishes from everyone out there. He and his entire family. So they all went through this together. Fingers crossed that Woody will feel good enough to be able to record for this Friday's episode. So it'd be the first time we're able to do it together. I wanted to mention that last Friday's episode, we had some strange stuff happen with Friday's episode. For some reason, and no one's been able to pinpoint this yet, none of our tech partners, many of you that use the Apple Podcast app to listen to the show did not have the show download to your device as it normally would. You didn't get it immediately when we dropped it. Some of you got it hours later. Some of you may have not received it at all. Really, really weird. So if you're hearing this and you missed Friday's show altogether, please go back and give it a listen. I was joined by my buddy, AJ Benza. If you did get to listen and you enjoyed the episode, please give AJ a listen on his show, which is called Fame is a Bitch. I also do a show with him on that same feed, Fame is a Bitch feed. We call ours Everything is a Bitch. But if you enjoyed AJ, he's got great stories, inside Hollywood stories. He's a guy who's lived a crazy life. I mean, things in life have either gone unbelievably well for AJ or unbelievably badly for AJ. There is no in between. And one of the wonderful things about AJ is the guy can't help but be honest. And so in Fame is a Bitch, you get the truth about when he was flying high and all the good stuff that that was happening and the people he did things with and some unbelievable stories involving those folks. And you also get the flip side of it when it went bad, it went really bad and everything he has endured through those times. So, if you enjoyed AJ, give Fame as a Bitch a listen or two. I wanted to start with a story from USA Today that I saw that I was really surprised to see. So USA Today did some kind of survey across the United States and found that Louisiana, where a large portion of this audience lives, is the loneliest state in the United States. More than one in five people, 21% of people in the state, say they are either always or usually lonely. Dr. Andrea Espinoza at Ochsner Health says loneliness can lead to many other health issues like mental illness and other health complications. She says the effects of loneliness can be as devastating to your health as smoking a pack of cigarettes a day. She points specifically to increased risk of dementia, cardiovascular disease, stroke, and early death. The recommendations from the doctor are to join support groups, volunteer, attend music concerts, or find some other kind of creative release. She says a simple way to combat loneliness is to just go outside and get some sunlight. Go out for some kind of walk or exercise each day. She doesn't say this specifically, but my personal recommendation is go out and get yourself a pet. Go adopt a pet. Get a cat, a dog, some kind of exotic. Get yourself a companion. Sometimes they're even more supportive than humans and better listeners. Let's go to Canada, Toronto to be specific, where a 91-year-old billionaire was arrested on Friday for sexual assault. That's right. This guy's 91. His name is Frank Stronach, and he once oversaw a sprawling auto parts empire. He was charged with 5 criminal offenses, including rape, sexual assault, indecent assault on a female, and forcible confinement. The Peel Regional Police revealed that the alleged sexual assaults lasted from the 1980s to 2023. In case you're curious, Peel is the second largest municipal police force in Ontario. Only the Toronto and Montreal police forces are larger. They've got 2,200 uniformed members. But hold on for a second. I mean, you got a 91-year-old billionaire here, and he's brought up on charges that run from the 1980s all the way to 2023. So you're probably asking yourself, how can he be brought up on charges from 40 years ago in the 1980s? And this came as no surprise to me, but having looked at a lot of laws in Canada, Canada's criminal code does not have a statute of limitations for prosecuting sexual assault. So survivors can file charges at any time after the assault. You might also ask yourself, based upon the 2023 accusation, this guy committed a sexual assault at age 90, 91 now. I don't know, folks, but nevertheless, the Austrian-Canadian businessman was arrested in the posh Toronto suburb of Aurora. Stronach will appear at the Ontario Court of Justice at a later date. So they have not named a date that he's going to appear in court. Peel Regional Police Constable Tyler Bell confirmed that there were multiple accusers, but he declined to specify how large that number was. So we don't know if we're dealing with 2 or we're dealing with 200 here. Obviously, this is a high-profile case. Our special victims unit is bound to protect the victims, and in doing so, that's why we're being vague. There's more than one victim, but we won't confirm the number yet, he added. Well, score another one for Canadian justice there. I mean, you can come out of the woodwork 40 years later, make an accusation against a 91-year-old guy, and you can remain anonymous. To head up his defense team, Stronach tapped distinguished lawyer Brian Greenspan. He's also represented clients like Naomi Campbell and Justin Bieber. Well, I mean, if he defended the Biebs, this guy must be the best. But in a statement, Greenspan said that the 91-year-old billionaire categorically denies all the allegations that have been brought against him. He looks forward to the opportunity to fully respond to these charges and to maintain his legacy as a philanthropist and as an icon of the Canadian business community. This guy, Stronach, was born in Austria in 1932. He grew up under Nazi rule before he moved to Canada in the mid-1950s. In 1957, the entrepreneur launched Magna in his garage. That's the name of that auto parts chain. And over the years, he built it into one of the world's biggest suppliers of auto parts. That company has a present day market cap of $12.5 billion. The company built is worth $12.5 billion today. The auto parts giant issued a statement saying that they had, quote, no knowledge of the investigation or the allegations that have been raised beyond what has been reported in the media. They also distanced themselves from Stronach, saying that he relinquished control of the company in 2010. I guess he sold his stock and vacated the CEO chair back in 2010. In 2013, Stronach was named to what's called the Order of Canada, which is one of the nation's most prestigious distinctions. Well, here's the problem with these things, with something like this, is, you know, if you're up in Canada and you're born anytime after, well, they said 1980, so anytime after 1960, and you know, at any point in your life came within like a mile and a half of this guy's business or his home address, you could jump on board and get on this sue the old guy bandwagon here. None of these alleged victims from the 80s or 90s are going to have any physical evidence, or doubt they're going to have any physical evidence. It's all going to be stories about and end up being, you know, Stronach's word versus their word. And if there are a lot of them, it's, you know, it's pretty easy to convince a jury that that what you're charging him with is true. Innocent or not, I doubt anyone in Stronach's inner circle is going to think it's healthy for this guy to stand trial at age 91. So we'll pay attention to this, but I bet a lot that we'll find that there are only one or two attorneys that are representing a bunch of alleged victims here. It seems to always kind of go this way. I'd also bet that they'll drop all the charges and they'll enter confidential settlement agreements, you know, really thick NDAs attached to them, and we'll never learn their names or how much money they received. That's the way these things go. And I saw it vividly in the Penn State scandal. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if this wasn't inspired by the Penn State scandal. You know, I know some of you are out there right now saying, Mike, you don't know that. How dare you call these victims liars? You know, this was a very powerful man, and these women were frightened into silence for years and years. And look, that's possible. I could be wrong, but, you know, it just, you tend to get a nose for these things. And when the guy is 91 years old and there was never a contemporaneous report on any of these things, somebody's claiming that at age 90, he committed a sexual assault. Like I said, I bet a lot that this thing is going to come together the way I'm saying. A couple of lawyers representing a ton of potential victims, a billionaire whose advisors say this isn't worth screwing around with, just write a check. And the guy writes a check and everybody goes on their way. So let's see what happens here. I'd be proven wrong, but that would be my bet.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
Going to go to Wisconsin, where back in 2022, a then 14-year-old named Carson Peters Berger was arrested for the murder of his 10-year-old cousin, Lily Peters. If that's not shocking enough, Peters Berger was also accused of raping Lily Peters' body after she died. Carson Peters Berger wants to be tried as a child, meaning he could be freed from jail by the time he's 25. Peters Berger allegedly killed Lily Peters while they walked along a hiking trail in Chippewa Falls. That happened on April 24th, 2022. He allegedly told police he punched her in the stomach, knocked her to the ground, hit her with a stick, and strangled her to the point of death before he raped her. Prosecutors told the court Peters Berger planned to rape and kill the victim from the get-go when he left the house with the victim to go down the trail. So he did all this and it was all premeditated. The boy was charged as an adult with first-degree intentional homicide and two counts of sexual assault and faced life in prison. He's been held at a juvenile detention center in Eau Claire, Wisconsin for the last 2 years and is slated to stay there until he is 18. But his lawyers argued in a 35-page brief that he should be tried as a juvenile, which would send him to jail for 10 years, letting him walk free at age 25. Judge Stephen Gibbs ruled on January 22nd of this year that Peters Berger would be treated as an adult, but the Wisconsin Court of Appeals agreed to hear an appeal by his defense. So that's the stage we are at now. We are waiting for the defense team to deliver this appeal to the Wisconsin Court of Appeals. The court disagrees that a possible 10-year confinement in the juvenile system, registering as a sex offender, and that the defendant would be vulnerable to the adult system would be punishment enough for the defendant, Gibbs wrote in his ruling. Petersburger's lawyer, a guy named Michael Cullen, not that Michael Cullen, objected, arguing sending him to jail for decades wouldn't deter others and would only be retribution. In this case, putting him in an adult prison for life is not necessary. It will not motivate change or cause change. It's punishment for the sake of punishment, which is not what the law permits for juveniles. He added, there is no evidence that imposing the harsh outcome upon Petersburger will in any way deter others. The Wisconsin Attorney General, Josh Call, and Assistant Attorney General, John Flynn, submitted a 25-page rebuttal last Monday, arguing that the crime was just simply too serious, that this was an intentional murder combined with a gruesome sexual assault. He convinced her to go down that trail. The court found that Petersburger admitted that the physical assault of the young woman was vicious and brutal in nature, involved punching the victim, knocking the victim to the ground, and hitting the victim with a stick. Chippewa County DA Wade Newell estimated the Court of Appeals would take about 4 weeks to make its mind up. No trial date has been set, and Gibbs declared that the criminal case would not return to court until the appeal was decided. So, I mean, if that's not a case where they got to be tried as an adult, I don't know what the heck is. But on a little bit lighter note, let's go to the New York area, where biologists have located what they are calling a, quote, nursery of baby great white sharks off the coast. It's the focus of a new Nat Geo episode called Baby Sharks in the City, and that will stream on July 8th on Disney Plus, Hulu, and Nat Geo. The shark, quote, daycare center is located in what they're calling the New York Bight, a huge ocean triangle formed by the southern tip of New Jersey, the eastern tip of Long Island and New York. So this triangular area of the Atlantic there. Captain Greg Metzger, who heads the South Fork National History Museum on Long Island, said scientists have been studying baby white sharks in New York since the 60s, but it was only in the last few years that they discovered the existence of this nursery. Dr. Toby Curtis, a shark scientist, said that the 100-foot-deep nursery produces hundreds of great white sharks every year. The babies are on their own from day one. Those cruel mama sharks just abandon those baby sharks as soon as they spit them out. I watched a French shark movie the other day on Netflix called Under Paris, and that movie tells the opposite story about a mama shark protecting the babies, although they're supposed to be a mako, not a great white, so maybe that's the difference. This guy said larger adult white sharks do occasionally pass through Long Island via this area, but they very rarely overlap during the summertime when the pups are there. So mama leaves and never shall cross paths again with her baby, I guess. Curtis said that when the weather gets colder in the fall and the water starts to cool off, the pups migrate south. Boom, boom, boom. The bottom line is New Yorkers will be surprised how exciting and how much life is going on out there. There's whales and dolphins and sea turtles and seals and a number of shark species, including great whites, tigers, and makos. Well, New Yorkers may not appreciate how healthy the ocean in their own backyard is. So he went, the Metzger guy said during the first 4 years of their lives, sharks are basically traveling the entire East Coast. How wonderful for all those people at the East Coast beaches. Research scientist Megan Witten noted that, quote, there's this popular perception that sharks are kind of these mindless killing machines that are right off of our beaches. But the more we study them, the more we learn that that is certainly not the case. We're just starting to scratch the surface of what we know about these animals with new technologies. Okay, well, that's wonderful, Megan. I am no research scientist, but my personal opinion is they're absolutely mindless killing machines, and they are right off of our beaches, as witnessed here in the panhandle of Florida and the Carolinas and a couple other places over the last few weeks. So crazy. The shark nursery. Well, folks, if a relative, friend, pet, or coworker of yours should be unfortunate enough to get chewed up by a shark in the surf, have no fear. Our good friends Roy, Kristen, and Kristen at Louisiana Funeral Services and Louisiana Pet Crematory will take care of all your needs. They've got a team of professionals experienced in all things, including preparation of a body following a shark attack. I embellished that part. That's not really true. They take care of every phase. So whether it's a full traditional service and burial or a cremation or a service in cremation for a beloved family pet or critter, they have got you covered. You know what to do. Drive into Broussard and look for that big American flag. Or you can go to lafuneralservices.com or lapetcrematory.com. And Roy, Kristen, and Kristen will treat you like family because they are family to us. Rest easy. All right, from one Netflix story to another. At the end of May, Netflix released this series. Jerianne and I watched it. It's one of those short three-episode things. It's called Dancing for the Devil, the 7M TikTok Cult. And the documentary follows this family in one of the nicer suburbs of Detroit, where the two daughters, their names are Melanie and Miranda Wilking, you know, grow up dancing, and eventually as they move into their teens, they start posting their dance videos on TikTok and draw a large following and become, you know, TikTok stars. I didn't realize this, but I guess if you become big enough on TikTok these days, there are a lot of reasons to head to Hollywood. I thought you just, one of the beauties of these social platforms is it doesn't matter where you are, but I guess there's more work to get in Hollywood. And so that's what happened with the Wilking sisters. At a point, they left the Detroit area and headed to Hollywood. So once they were in California, Miranda and her boyfriend, this is another dancer, and he goes by the name B-Dash. I think his name is James, but he goes by B-Dash Derek. They get lured into this church with this really sketchy pastor by the name of Robert Shin. And I should have said, quote, church, because it really is a cult. And so Miranda married, you know, the guy B Dash, and now after the airing of the documentary, they're concerned about their safety, and they've taken to Instagram to post those concerns. So on last Monday, the 10th, they put a post on Instagram saying that they've received a bunch of threats following this docuseries. That it's not true, that the docuseries insinuates that they're involved in a cult, and they say they're not. She says, I don't normally make this kind of content, but I just wanted to be transparent and a little vulnerable with you. Before this documentary, my husband and I were safe. We felt safe. Now that this documentary is out, we feel like our lives have been put in danger. Okay, I don't really understand, having seen the documentary, why it would put their lives in danger. In the series, Miranda's sister Melanie, you know, basically tells the story of how Miranda and James B Dash got together, and it started out with the three of them. So Miranda and Melanie both making videos with B Dash, and then Melanie sort of got moved out of the way, and it became just Miranda and B Dash. And this guy, B-Dash, was what's known as a crump dancer. And actually, he was one of the top crump dancers in the world, which is how he got famous on TikTok. And crump stands for Kingdom Radically Uplifted Mighty Praise, which is a high-energy, religiously inspired street dance. B-Dash was on a reality show on NBC called World of Dance. So the Wilking sisters began collaborating with B-Dash back in April of 2019, And like I said, Miranda and B-Dash got together. And at that point, Miranda really shut her, not only her sister, but her entire family off and stopped communicating with them altogether. And when you join this quote unquote church, everything you do occurs behind the gates of, it's really a, like a large home site and church in, I think it's Sunland, California. So sort of the North San Fernando Valley, area of LA. You know, in the series, they highlight some people that joined this 7M and were fortunate enough to get out. And one of the things they do is they walk you through what happens with the money that these dancers are making from these videos they're posting on behalf of brands that sponsor them. And, you know, they go through a dollar that gets made and how it gets chopped up. And, you know, everyone that joins is forced to donate to the church. Then there's money that they pay to the Shin guy as like he's their manager. And then there's the cost of their room and board and everything else. And basically they're keeping less than 5% of what they gross. And, you know, sure sounds like a cult to me. So she is still in this compound because she is an adult. Her parents have been able to do basically nothing about this other than, you know, create awareness of it and help get this docuseries made and hopefully off of, you know, the exposure that the docuseries is given to this Robert Shin guy and the 7M cult. Eventually they will be able to charge this guy with something. But for now, this thing just continues to go on. I'd recommend the docuseries. Again, it's one of those, you know, three episode deals on Netflix. And the title again is Dancing with the Devil, the 7 TikTok Cult. Let's go across the pond for a story you're not going to believe. Amy Beatro lived a secret double life as an alleged assassin for hire. But all that changed when her gun jammed, causing her to botch a contract killing in Birmingham, England. Amy Beatro, 44 years old, flew over from her home in Milwaukee to kill a boutique clothing store owner named Sikandar Ali on the orders of his rival, a guy named Muhammad Islam, who's 56, and his son, Muhammad Nazir, who's 30. A trial in the UK heard how the hit woman, who was an administrator for the Milwaukee Brewers baseball team, so her... by day, she was working for the Brewers baseball team in Milwaukee, and by night, she was traveling the globe doing hits. So she allegedly disguised herself in a hijab before trying to gun down Ali outside a house in an area called Acox Green of Birmingham. This is way back in September of 2019. She fled the scene when her gun jammed, but later returned in a taxi and fired three shots at the property before texting the target and saying, "Stop playing hide and seek. Where are you hiding?" After the failed hit, Beatro flew back to the U.S. 2 days later and has not been seen since, although she is in pretty constant communication with friends and family back in Milwaukee. It's crazy. So, and there's no other cases where she's accused of any other attempted hits anywhere. So she's gone as a contract killer unnoticed for however many killings she's done, and is just escaped off the grid since this thing happened 5 years ago. And so this is the trial we're talking about here, is the trial of the co-conspirators with her, but not her. So Nazir and Islam, who were found guilty of conspiracy to murder on Monday, held a grudge against Mr. Ali's family following a violent dispute at his boutique clothing store in Birmingham. That happened in the summer of 2018. And apparently it was more than a dispute. A bunch of windows were smashed and the interior of that boutique was trashed. The police were called. There were serious injuries. But then in September of 2019, they flew Bitro over to Birmingham to kill Mr. Ali and his family. And they were, you know, able to trace her path through her stay in England, where she was in London, she was in Manchester, she was in Brighton, she was in Birmingham. So she was all over the place for a period of days. She was also in Derby, where I guess she got into an accident with a rent-a-car. And so there's a very full record of her movements while she was there, including, you know, tracking a phone to her, which was, you know, at the exact location twice, including the second time when the shots were fired. So she has, she sent messages, as I said, to folks back home. So on September 6th of 2019, Nazir and Islam traveled from their home in Derby to Birmingham, with Nazir spending more than 2 hours in a hotel with Bitro. The Birmingham Crown Court heard how Bitro was disguised. She pulled up in a Mercedes before Mr. Ali pulled up in an Audi nearby. The prosecutor said, as he did, the would-be assassin came from the driver's side of the Mercedes. As she left the Mercedes, she left the driver's door open. She walked quite calmly towards Sikandar Ali and was pointing a gun at his head. As she got closer to Ali, he saw her and he saw the gun, and she pulled the trigger to fire the gun at him. But mercifully and luckily for him, the gun jammed. Mr. Hegarty went on to say Mr. Ali rapidly reversed his car and drove off, while Bitro abandoned her Mercedes nearby, where it was later found by police. The next morning, she took a taxi to the house and fired those 3 shots at the property before returning to the taxi and going to a McDonald's. She got hungry after that. Afterwards, Bitro sent Aslat Muhammad a text saying, "You want to rip me off? You want to be a drug kingpin? Go look at your house. I will show you. Watch your back. I will be shedding blood soon." So she fails to make the hit, and then she's sending threatening texts to the targets. 2 days later, she's back in the U.S. So police launched an investigation into the shootings, and that trail led to Islam and Nazir, and obviously led to Bitro, but she's been nowhere to be found since then. Both of those men were found guilty of conspiracy to commit murder. They'll be sentenced on August 9th. The detective inspector, Matt Marston, said Islam and Nazir were determined to take revenge following a fallout where they were injured. The lengths they went to in trying to make sure they weren't implicated in pulling the trigger are immense. However, thanks to some great police work, we were able to place them firmly in the middle of the attempted murder plot. Efforts to locate a woman we believe to have been involved in the conspiracy continue. 5 years later, they continue. The American hit woman in hiding is in hiding after being exposed for the botched contract killing. She's been communicating with friends from her hometown in Wisconsin, telling them she's trapped in a, quote, shit show. LOL, what are you up to? One male friend from Stevens Point, Wisconsin, messaged Bitro last Thursday. So this is something that's just still going on 5 years later. And she says she's still on the lam in Asia. Dude, I saw like WTF. I don't even know where to start with all this misinformation that's said about me. She wrote to him in a Facebook Messenger. It's an effing shit show. I'm glad you're okay, the friend messaged back. Do you need anything? Can I help you somehow? I don't know that you're allowed to do that, friend. I don't know, dude, she responded. I don't think there's anything you can help with, but I really appreciate you reaching out. Signing off with a red heart emoji. One local who didn't hear from Bitro was her own mother, Jean Johnson, who lives in a trailer park in Stevens Point, which is a couple hours north of Milwaukee. She had no idea about her daughter's alleged crime until a report that showed up in the Daily Mail last Thursday. So, I mean, for 5 years, she hasn't known what the heck's going on with her daughter. She says, I'm shocked. I've been waiting for this day, either trouble or dead. What the hell was she thinking? She snapped as she read through the article. In a stark warning to authorities, she said, my daughter's not dumb. She knows how to hide. Well, yeah, she's hidden from you for 5 years, I guess. Johnson's divorced from Beatrice's father, who's currently incarcerated in Wisconsin on felony drug charges and has spent his entire adult life behind bars. That's not shocking. Beatrice's gun jam failure is a source of mockery for some of her old Wisconsin buddies. So she's literally getting trolled for having the gun jam. There's a lot of hunting that goes on in that area of Wisconsin, and I'm sure she's never hunted in her life, one guy posted. As far as I know, she's never even fired a gun. She's the last person I'd ever think of to be an assassin. So I guess she had them fooled. I mean, she probably didn't even put a shell in the chamber the first time, he said. Thankfully, it didn't go like she wanted to, because at least now there's a snowball's chance she might not be in that much trouble. I think she's in a lot of trouble, buddy, but I don't know that they are ever going to find her. So, folks, that is the story of the woman who worked for the Milwaukee Brewers by day and was a hit woman by night, Amy Beatro, who is on the lam 5 years after this botched hit in England.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Moving right along, and it being Father's Day as I'm recording, I just had to share this story. And this is the story of a guy they are calling the Sperminator. His name is Ari Nagel, and he's 48 years old and lives in Brooklyn, New York. And he welcomed his 165th child into the world last Wednesday. But he says he is soon going to retire from spreading his seed. I'll stop when I'm 50, Nagel said. He will turn 49 in August. Physically, I can keep going, but there may be increased risks for things like autism with older males. He wrote that on a text from a cruise ship in the Bahamas where he was vacationing with his first son, 20-year-old Tyler, and child number 33, his 7-year-old daughter, Topaz. But for now, the 6'2" prolific Kingsborough Community College math professor is celebrating his latest baby, who was birthed by a woman in Connecticut. It was that mom's fourth child with me, Nagel boasted. Nagel hands out sperm samples to one or two aspiring mothers every week. Sometimes he does this through clinics, and other times he does it face-to-face. But all of these are non-sexual meetings. When he's not growing his progeny, he vowed to, quote, try to be a better father to my 175 children, 34 of whom he hasn't met yet. Wonder what the heck is going on today for this guy. I'll never be able to be as good of a dad to my kids as my father was to me, lamented Nagel, who grew up in an Orthodox Jewish family in upstate New York. Having lots of kids can bring a lot of happiness and joy into your life, but I don't suggest 175, he said. However, the Sperminator said he sees many of his sons and daughters often, mostly the 56 who live in New York, the 20 who live in New Jersey, and the 13 that live in Connecticut. So that's 89 of that. So that's about half of his kids he sees fairly often. Some moms don't want me to play a role, but I leave them the option. If they change their mind and then want me involved, I get involved. So legitimately tries to stay or tries to get in the lives of all 165 of these kids. Still, he keeps a spreadsheet of the names, birthdays, and addresses and phone numbers of each of his offspring and plasters any pictures he has of them around his Kingsborough office. Oh my God. The photos, which cover nearly every inch of the wall in the room, depict little infants cooing in their car seats, small uniformed children posing for school pictures, and Miguel playing with and snuggling various kids. After his Sunday morning return to Brooklyn from the Bahamas, Miguel expects that he and a handful of his kids, along with their mothers, will go to the Bronx Zoo like they did last year on Father's Day. So as I'm speaking, he is probably running around the Bronx Zoo with some kind of pile of his offspring. He says, additionally, I'll receive many cards and gifts. The one piece of advice Miguel tries to impart to his descendants is to embrace saying yes to doing favors, new experiences, invites, and opportunities. It's the key to a fulfilling life. I say yes to everything. Yes, he does. But he wishes there was a woman out there who would say yes to him. So despite having the 165 offspring, I have all the dating apps, but I haven't had much success finding a woman. Apparently, nobody wants to date someone with 165 kids from 10 different women that are pregnant right now. So he's going to get that number up to 175. He said, I'm also pretty broke, which doesn't help. Well, dude, I don't know. I mean, I guess that's let's call that an uplifting Father's Day story. The Sperminator, Ari Miguel, 48-year-old from Brooklyn, who will soon have 175 offspring on planet Earth. I mean, somebody needs to keep that spreadsheet because they need to make sure that none of these 175 end up hooking up with the others and about all that stuff. So, wow. How do we follow up the Sperminator? We're going to follow up the Sperminator by talking about one of our favorite places, or one of Woody Overton's favorite places. The Waffle House has sort of become our, I don't know, I call it the unofficial, official restaurant of choice between 2 a.m. and 5 a.m. when you're hungover. That qualifies it enough. But the Waffle House CEO, Joe Rogers, announced this week that the restaurant chain is making its largest investment in their workforce in their 68-year history. The company is raising base pay for servers to $3 an hour. Yeah. This is a multi-year agreement with the Waffle House servers, and so it involves incremental pay increases over the next few years, and by 2026, that hourly wage will be up to $5.25 an hour at all of the company's 2,000-plus locations. Many restaurants in the U.S. offer what is known as the, quote, tipped minimum wage. Under labor law, they can pay employees as little as $2.13 an hour if that amount combined with their tips allows them to at least match the federal minimum wage, which is $7.25 an hour, which has been $7.25 an hour since 2009. I mean, come on, that's 15 years the federal minimum wage hasn't moved. I mean, we know inflation just from the last few years is, 20-something percent up. 15 years, I got to imagine it's probably more like 40 or 50% up over that time, and they haven't moved the minimum wage. And man, as a tipped employee, how much would it suck to have, to have your tips count toward your hourly wage in order to make the minimum wage? I mean, God, really feel for these people. I don't know what kind of life you can afford to have off of that kind of money. Rogers also said Waffle House will seek to offset the additional labor costs. Of course, the company's not going to pay for this. They're going to do it by raising menu prices, noting that patrons at the chain's urban locations would see those prices change even more. Waffle House is privately held. They've got 2,000 locations, hundreds in the state of Georgia where their home is. The CEO also announced that hourly pay jumps all the way to $10 an hour for those while serving escaped convicts. No, that's actually not true. That's a reference to a couple of stories we've told in the past. So the company says it's considering several different policy changes designed to improve employee safety. Well, that's good. There were two separate shootouts this year inside of Waffle House locations. So look, I guess it's good that they are doing something to raise the pay, but you know, man, the pay is pretty god awful. So go visit the Waffle House, pay those raised prices. They're still, I think, very, very cheap compared to other places you can go eat. I want to end today with a story that I saw last night and got a good chuckle out of. So Dr. Fauci has a book coming out, and I don't know, it's not a tell-all kind of book, I don't think. But in the book, he talks about how President Trump used to shout F-bombs at him. In his newly released book, Anthony Fauci says President Trump yelled F-bombs at him on the phone and accused him of costing the U.S. $1 trillion effing dollars. I'd like to see that analysis. Fauci wrote that Trump would, quote, announce that he loved me and then scream at me on the phone. I have pretty thick skin, but getting yelled at by the president of the United States, no matter how much he tells you that he loves you, is not fun. Let's just say I found this to be a bit out of the ordinary. In a call on June 3rd, 2020, quote, the president was irate, saying that I could not keep doing this to him, Dr. Fauci wrote. Quote, he said he loved me, but the country was in trouble and I was making it worse. He was right, dude. He added that the stock market went up only 600 points in response to the positive phase 1 vaccine news, and it should have gone up 1,000 points. And so I cost the country $1 trillion effing dollars. Not a very detailed analysis, President Trump. The new book is called Orange Man Mean. No, it's not. It's actually called On Call, A Doctor's Journey in Public Service. And it will be available just in time to try and influence opinions of Trump as a crazy man going into the election. And based upon those stories, it might be somewhat successful in doing that. Of course, Trump didn't help himself the other day. I don't know if any of you saw this, but while he was campaigning in, I think he was in Las Vegas. Yeah, he was campaigning in Nevada. He went on this bizarre rant about how he'd prefer to be, if he was in a sinking boat that was surrounded by sharks, how he'd rather be electrocuted in the boat than eaten by the sharks. You have to watch it. Google that. I have no idea where the hell this came from. I mean, whether you love Trump or you hate Trump, I just challenge you to tell me what the F he was doing when he went on that rant. You can't make this stuff up. His opponent was out there doing some pretty entertaining stuff himself last week. So look, we brought it all to you. We've gone from the Sperminator to the assassin who's on the lam for 5 years. I guess she's not no longer working for the Brewers if she's doing that. We got shark nurseries in New York. We've got a brutal murder from a 14-year-old to his 10-year-old cousin who now thinks that he should be treated as a juvenile. And we got a billionaire alleged sex offender. So a little bit of everything today, which hopefully will be the last episode of the Woody Overton Window where you are dealing with me solo. Cross your fingers that Woody is with us. But thanks for listening. Appreciate all of the support. And if you like the show, please share with your friends and We will talk to you on Friday. Thanks for listening.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.